Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, I am no longer thinking in terms of weeks, but in months. And I am in my fifth of reporting on the theater world. A lot of folks have asked me what can you talk about now that all the shows are off? Well, they may be off stage, but many forms of theatrical entertainment are online, of course, including from the theater world, especially from the theater world. Though even I never expected to have this much to focus on. Beginning with any news of substance within the community, then there are reviews of things I've recently watched. No bad reviews at this time, thank you. And then, of course, there is whatever happens to be coming up. So, with that in mind, on we go. News of note? Well, the Williamstown Theater in your neck of the wonderful woods is going audible, literally putting its next planned four productions on the well-known listening platform. If you go on the theater's site, you can watch artistic director Mandy Greenfield discuss this in a conversation with the wonderful actress Jessica Hecht. It sounds promising and creative. Also on the optimism front, the Second Stage Theater in New York City has announced two new plays that will premiere in it next season, whenever that turns out to be. Both are by award-winning playwrights. First, Pulitzer winner Lynn Nottage, who I quote often for having called artists the second responders at this moment. The other is by Pulitzer finalist Rajiv Joseph. The Second Stage's season also includes a revival of Richard Greenberg's Take Me Out. The backdrop there is baseball. Hey, we'll take that in any form these days. And one player's coming out of the closet as well as out of the dugout. So a diverse season to look forward to at Second Stage. As for what I recently watched, which I alerted you to when we last spoke, among the most notable was Red Bull Theater's series of 8 10-minute plays. It was entitled Private Lives, the name of Noel Coward's famous play, and one that nicely encapsulates how so many of us are feeling these days. Now, these pieces also included a heavy dose of Black Lives Matter sentiment. One is even called a haircut tutorial in full color. A few of the one acts cleverly use Coward's balcony motif, so memorable from the original Private Lives. The most recognizable playwrights here are probably Teresa Rebeck of countless plays and Jeremy O'Harris of Slave Play. His piece here is called Fear and Misery of the Master Race. But even more praiseworthy are the versatile actors who take on vastly different roles in most of the works, including Kathleen Chalfant, Lily Cooper, and Charlene Woodard. Excellent all. It's a fun 90 minutes, which I hope remains on Red Bull's YouTube site. I also listen to the Classic Stage Company's weekly conversation, hosted by that company's British and highly literate artistic director, John Doyle. These are always delightful somehow. This one was with last year's Tony winner, André de Shields. He says, I spent 50 years sowing seeds, so when it was time to reap, I would be ready. And in 2019, when Hadestown came along, well, he enjoyed what he called an abundant harvest. DeShields also discusses his beginnings as a black man from Baltimore. When he tried to enter the theater, he was immediately asked, can you sing? Can you dance? If you couldn't, you weren't black, he says. The conversation remains on CSC's site. And this Thursday's chat is with the actress Becky Ann Baker. And I finally found the courage, not being a great processor of Shakespeare, to start listening to the Public Theater's podcast of Richard II. This, of course, was supposed to be Shakespeare in the Park, but now has become Shakespeare on the Air. In fact, for a dummy like me, this was a helpful format. There is narration by Lupito Nyong'o. Think of this as a murder mystery, she starts us off. As well as conversation with the performers after each episode. The best way to listen, I think, is to go to the Public site where it cleanly offers episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4. By the way, the cast is at least 90% black, actors like Andre Holland, Felicia Rashad, and the great John Douglas Thompson, as well as Miriam Hyman in the devilishly and usually male role of Bolingbroke. Now, maybe it's me, but one could almost make an argument that for whatever reason, their mastery of Shakespeare makes the bard's words particularly natural and conversational. John Douglas Thompson, for example, is considered among the best American interpreters of Shakespeare right now. My highlight of the week, as I predicted last week, was a live reading by the Cape Cod Theater Project of I, My Ruination. This is about the cost paid by theater and film director Elia Kazan's ultimate decision to name names during the blacklisting period. Think of this as an invitation, not a subpoena, says a member of the House Committee during the early 50s. I feel the unease drifting in from D.C., says Kazan, even while he was in Hollywood competing for an Oscar at the time. This play was interesting, and let me count the ways. First, because it's truly a work in progress, so viewers got to watch and even participate in a discussion about it after. So it will be fun to see how it changes as it moves along. Also, it featured a stellar cast. Paul Giamatti gives a ferocious performance as Kazan. Corey Stoll plays his close friend but eventual counterpart on the ethical front, Arthur Miller. In the show, Miller stops by on his way to Salem, where he has an idea for a play. Yes, that one. Nia Arianda plays Kazan's influential wife. Ariane Moyad takes on a few parts, as does Pedro Pascal. They are all super and clearly still making their way through this piece written by Kevin R. Teague. It's too unwieldy for now, a lot of self-narration that could easily go away, but still fascinating and even foreboding, so keep an eye out for future readings. I also took in, I don't know how else to describe it, These Uncertain Times, produced by Source Material, which you can stream for a few more days. This is a truly digital and rather amorphous work, no real narrative or character development per se, yet it feels appropriate for these zooming times. Six performers do some talking without really connecting. They snack and weep, tell some lame jokes, and do a lot of drinking. The mood here is clearly one of melancholy and uncertainty, particularly about their love of and life in the theater. If only we knew, they repeat often. True words for sure. As for what's happening next, the Black Theater Network is offering a full week of virtual events that sound intriguing, filled with artists in front of and behind the curtain. It begins tonight, but the one I'm most looking forward to is Wednesday's discussion between the distinguished playwright Dominique Morisseau and Professor Eric Dyson. The subject is radical longevity. From the Actors Fund, Wednesday through Sunday, you can catch the actress Linda Pearl portraying writer Joan Didion in a reading of the stage adaptation of Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking. Vanessa Redgrave, you may recall, premiered that one on Broadway. And if you are up for a touch of the Irish, check out the Fishamble Company's Tiny Plays series. These can be found through YouTube. Finally, allow me two personal achievements. My 15-minute one-act called Dear Auntie Dee received a wonderful response last week at the Skylight Theater in Los Angeles, and it can be found on YouTube forever, I hope. I'm still bathing in the hundreds of comments that came from friends and strangers alike. It always feels great when you touch a nerve. But perhaps more amazingly, I managed to nab a ticket to the Old Vic's next live-streamed show called Three Kings and starring Andrew Scott of Fleabag fame. Yes, he played the sexy priest. The first day I tried, I was told I was number 10,083 in line. Needless to say, I gave up. But the next morning, I went on the site again, just for the hell of it, and I got a ticket right away. I have no idea what the moral of that story is, Jill, but I'll be reporting on that show next week.
My question is, what time did you go online? And where were you?
Well, I was in L.A., and of course it was in Britain.
Right, so I'm just wondering if that 9 hours, if that helped you. Not
exactly.
9 hours, 8 hours.
And my question is, I can't wait to see what time it I have to figure, I'll probably be watching in the middle of the night.
That is true.
I think it airs Wednesday if it's 7:30 British time. What is it here? Well, it's actually early.
You're fine. Subtract 8. You're in good shape.
Yeah, I should.
It's an early matinee. You'd just be leaving. You'd just be leaving for your matinee.
There you go. So that's going to work out perfectly. Anyway, those have been interesting shows. They're trying to save the old Vic, as you know, and so they've been doing these.
Did they
live.
Not also get a? But I believe I'm not sure, but I thought there was a bunch of money. When I say bunch, you know, this is one of those situations where nobody really focuses on how much it costs to run something like this until it's shut down and everyone's told to go home.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a big talk here, too. I was with people last night. We're talking about these Broadway shows and how long can the theaters, you know, wait. Well, Broadway theaters, you know, yeah, they're letting off a lot of people, et cetera, and they're not making money at this point. But, you know, the Broadway theaters are not going to go out of business. It's the small companies, the second stages, even the, you know, Playwrights Horizons that just won a couple Obie Awards. Those are the ones that really are in danger. You know, they need the support of their usual theater goers. So
I was talking to someone who is a fundraiser for a small outfit, and this is the only reason I'm bringing it up is because she is a fundraiser for a small outfit. And at the beginning, there was a tremendous concern. In fact, it's a summer camp for children. That is nonprofit all the way. And at the beginning, it was just, you know, obviously no one. They had basically a $5 million deficit, I'll just be absolutely blunt. And starting in May, as people realized different things, you know, in their own way about life, some coming out, some, they started doing very well.
Fundraising, mm-hmm. or actually put
fundraising. And that... it came up in conversation simply because one of the things that I noticed, you know, when I knew that the pandemic was going to be news, but people could come out of their houses, was when all of a sudden I started getting 30 emails a day from various politicians or people running for office. You know, you couldn't keep during, if you remember way back at the beginning, those slowed to a crawl, which they had to. But... Yeah. They're in full force and effect, and I get from everybody, so I do that, you know.
God, I keep saying I don't know what's going to happen when the election's over. I'm not going to get any emails.
Exactly. So the point is, since each one of those asks for a shekel or two, it should give you some sense of the fact that in certain places people are back in business. Note.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I'd like to know about I'm surprised I haven't heard from the camp my daughter went to for 9 years, which was a theater camp called French Woods in the Catskills. It's one of the main ones. And it's funny, I wonder how they're doing, obviously.
But probably not very well. But it's quite striking. You know, some people absolutely sit down and figure out how to work with this, and some people just curl up and don't. But I do know one thing. If you don't ask, you are unlikely. It's the old squeaky wheel is going to get grease.
Absolutely, absolutely. And out in your area, Great Barrington, they're putting on things. Maybe they're outside or whatever, but stuff's going on out there.
Yeah,
but
and you can feel it. And you can also... And you can also feel it. Another contributor mentioned something. They had gone to hear a violin... I think it was a flautist. It's somebody on the Hudson. They were on a boat, and there was plenty of open space, and it was quite beautiful. And yet there were people 90,000 feet apart wearing masks. So, you know, whatever. And it made them feel guilty about having their picnic. No one was packed in. So there's balance in all things.
Yeah, I'm in LA now, you know, for a few more weeks, and of course they're now the New York, as you could say. Though they still haven't completely shut it down, but people are very nervous out here. Like yesterday I visited three friends in their homes, but we all sat only outside. They're not even allowing people in their homes. At least these people weren't. So we sat in, fortunately, they all have beautiful balconies or yards. It was wonderful. But, it's kind of still new to them out here, the way we felt for 4 months in New York. And anyway, they each have their own advantages. You know, I'm in, but I'm out. So I can go on different walks. I can love right now. I'm looking at beautiful greenery outside my window. But pretty soon I'll be back and I'll be looking at the building across the street, you know, and outside my window. So anyway, I will talk to you next week, and I should be reporting from the Old Vic.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.